Support for WXAV 88.3 is being provided by Northwest Community Credit Union. The credit union helps students learn about the importance of banking on their futures and building solid financial habits, such as budgeting. Learn more about these concepts and many more on NWCCU's free financial literacy modules located on their website at nwccu.com or call them at 1-800-2-BELONG.
Bookies Bookstore is an underwriter of WXAV 88.3 FM. Located at 10324 Southwestern Avenue, Bookies inventory includes new and used books. Bookies also places orders and pre-orders for books not currently in stock. For more information, please visit their website at bookiesbookstores.com. You can also follow them on Facebook and Instagram by searching Bookies Chicago.
Support for WXAV 88.3 FM is being provided by Beverly Phonomart Records. Located at 1808 West 103rd Street, Beverly Phonomart has a large inventory of new and used vinyl records, CDs, and cassette tapes. Beverly Phonomart also has record players, t-shirts, and tote bags. For more information, please visit their website at beverlyphonomart.com. That's beverlyphonomart.com.
This podcast is being brought to you by WXAV 88.3 FM and WXAV.com. WXAV, bringing the best podcasts to you.
Hi, I'm Peter Creighton, and welcome to this WXAV podcast. Over the past 15 years, vinyl records have made a massive comeback in the public consciousness. Once a forgotten and discarded piece of plastic, vinyl records have grown in popularity to the point that they have their own holidays, Record Store Day and Vinylthon. To learn more about what the current state of vinyl is, I spoke with Kathy Ramsey, Educational Director of the nonprofit Women in Vinyl. In this wide-ranging conversation, Kathy discusses vinyl projections through 2025, the state of green vinyl, and the return of other physical media. Hear now my conversation with Kathy Ramsey. For those of us who don't know, what is Women in Vinyl and why was it founded?
So Women in Vinyl is a registered nonprofit, and it was an organization created in 2018 by Jen DiEugenio. She started it because she wanted to showcase women working in the industry by sharing their stories with the world through the online community, and basically to draw attention to the fact that this isn't just an industry that is for, I'm going to be frank here, old white men. So the idea, I mean, from the mission statement, if you check womeninvinyl.com, you'll see that our mission statement is empowering women, female identifying, non-binary, LGBTQ+, and BIPOC and otherwise marginalized humans working in the industry to create, preserve, and improve the art of music on vinyl.
I love everything that Women in Vinyl do. I think it's a really important mission to get more diversity into the record collecting community, but also into the manufacturing and the behind the scenes, if you will. So Kathy, it's 2024. How is the vinyl industry doing? Are sales stable? Are we seeing growth? Are we seeing decline? If you had to give a state of the union address to vinyl, what's going on?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to say, really, because vinyl's my beloved format of choice, we're still in a growth, or I suppose we should say a regrowth phase. So, I mean, projections are currently saying that by 2025, worldwide, vinyl is expected to hit a 7% annual growth rate. So that is quite significant. And what that means in numbers and dollars is it would be approximately 120 million units with a value of $3.9 billion. Just for reference, 2022's number in dollars was approximately $1.7 billion. So yeah, 2025. $3.9 billion. I mean, obviously inflation, everything's getting more expensive, but that is a sharp projection.
That's absolutely incredible. I didn't think it would be that high. Would you say then that vinyl is kind of like the number one physical media for people to buy music on now?
Physical, yes, in terms of media of music. In terms of items for fans, well, you know, we also have merch, like wearable merch as well. But certainly when it comes to music and, the media carrier, vinyl is certainly up there, but it's not alone. There are other formats also experiencing sort of the very early stages of that type of growth that we've seen with vinyl.
Now, I mean, just talking about the incredible numbers that vinyl is doing right now and that you mentioned, we did hear a few years ago that there's a printing backlog. Is that backlog still there? And just kind of what are some of the challenges bands are facing nowadays to get their albums printed?
Yes, in the industry, of course, that was highly publicized and there was a response to that backlog. And one of the responses that we saw were lots of new entrants into the pressing plant game. So it wasn't just sort of dominated by the few bigger companies, but there were lots of, let's say, smaller boutique pressing plants popping up. The effect of that, of course, means that the capacity increased. Taking that second part of your question, the challenges that artists, bands face, I would say that something at the moment that seems to be an issue is for especially smaller independent artists that are maybe doing everything themselves, is being able to have a record that's in the hands of a fan, but at a price point that is, that suits the fan's pocket. Because, I mean, there are things that are out of our control, as always, the external forces, such as inflation. The US is not alone in that issue. So, of course, inflation is constantly increasing, and that has a knock-on effect on the price of all goods and services, obviously. So we're seeing those retail prices creep up and up and up, and that can be a problem. Imagine you're a European artist and you've got a huge fan base in the US. And I say huge relatively because I want us to think about this being an independent artist. And they're currently in the situation where they're shipping their vinyl records to the US. Now, imagine all the costs involved with the logistics and, everything to do with the distribution side of things there. It's a hard business to be in. I mean, one solution that is actually presenting itself now that the capacity is increased is if an artist based overseas starts looking at their, like, seeking out long-term partners, such as a US pressing plant and a US distribution company, we can go back to that. I guess we've been there before in the business, working internationally, where there are, you start looking at your international plan rather than producing from one country and then shipping all around the world. So the US market has a number of these smaller pressing plants readily available for smaller artists to get in touch with and say, hey, I'm looking for a partner for the US. Here's how many I'm likely to be pressing. Here's the size of my fan base there, and here are the regions where they are in the US. Can we talk? So, obviously that would be a smart thing to do with the conditions that are out there at this moment. But likewise for a US artist, go explore what partners are in the markets where you have fans. Does it make sense to manufacture locally in a certain continent, because the economy is completely different and the price of goods and services are much cheaper? I mean, it wouldn't necessarily make sense to really hyper localize everything you do, but there are a number of ways that artists can sort of start looking at their global plan a little more and being strategic about their partnership choices.
I think you are bringing up some incredible points here, Kathy, that I think the average record collector doesn't necessarily think about, like just that whole distribution of, okay, we got this album, we printed it, now how are we going to get it into a store? How are we going to sell this to our fans and everything? That's really, really interesting, which kind of brings up, supply chains. We're just a few years out of COVID. And again, we always heard about supply chain issues. Have any of those been cleared up recently, especially with these new localized record plants going up in the regions?
Yep. I just want to zoom out a bit here. We're sort of in a world now where there are so many niches, right? All the different genres that we're all into, we can happily stay in a bubble and not, you know, be in a bit of an echo chamber there. And that's sort of how I'm seeing the vinyl industry as well, just from my point of view here, where there are, let's say we have the boutique pressing plants that maybe even specialize in certain types of genres, possibly, just like an independent store would have a slant towards a specific genre. So there is that. And then in terms of distribution, what we're finding is now that we're in the world of niches, of course, artists are taking that into their own hands if they're unable to get a distribution deal anywhere. So we're seeing an increase in D2C. So, you know, even with really small runs, so like 100, limited to 100, sold only on their Bandcamp. So, you know what I mean? I mean, this also relates to the question earlier about sort of the update on the State of the Union that, I think, you know, I'm not the expert in the room here. That would be my boss at Warner, Billy Fields. Just have to mention that. and of course, everything that Jen is doing. But I would say that it's bringing sort of, you know, different challenges of what we're facing now.
A few years ago, we spoke with Jen from Women in Vinyl. And one of the issues that was brought up was kind of the environmental impact of printing vinyl records was causing and everything. It seems like from our conversation right now, we're in like a exciting period of time where like innovation is really happening. Do you have any updates on any big innovations that you're really excited about?
Yes. And I love this. This is the hot topic at the moment. Let me take you and your listeners to Europe just for a second.
Please.
So, in the Netherlands, which, by the way, was my home for the best part of 20 years until recently, there is an organization called Green Vinyl Records. They're basically a collective of eight Dutch companies who've joined forces with the support and funding from the European Union. So, you know, this is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And they have the goal of reducing the amount of energy and waste within the vinyl record manufacturing process. So this is a great example of where the manufacturing industry in the Netherlands are sort of like, right, this is important. What do we need to make a difference here? And they've, you know, they've formed this group, Green Vinyl Records. So, I mean, if your listeners are interested in this, they should certainly look at greenvinylrecords.com and just read about the project. It's really fascinating and it's incredibly relevant because, let's face it, we're already late, across many industries with looking at sustainability and the effect on the environment. But, you know, these folks, they're putting their money where their mouth is. And then, of course, in Germany, so we're staying in Europe. I'll bring you back to the US in a sec. Long-standing pressing plants such as Optimal Media in Germany. I mean, they've been around forever. They recently introduced their bio vinyl. That's all one word, capital B, capital V. And they're offering bio vinyl as a sustainable vinyl record alternative. They, on their website, they say, for this innovative product, we use bio-based PVC in the production process, and it's identical in quality to a conventional pressing. And of course, very important nowadays, available in various colors.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear.
So, you know, because we get this, the different variants and the limited editions, this is also what's driving those sales up and helping with that 2025 prediction here. So this really excites me because it's just like, wow. And I saw vinyl that, you know, it doesn't have an actual label embossed into the piece of vinyl itself, right? Mm-hmm. Embossed is the wrong word, right? Those labels are actually pressed into the record. But instead, it's like this sort of like laser image. It just looks incredible. Like, it looks so different, but, you know, the penny drops and you're like, aha, we're in the future now. This is really a good move. I'm very curious to see how that happens. And then I'm just hoping that there are no nefarious players in the market that start popping up saying, oh, we're doing, you know, this is sustainable, this is environmental, when in fact they've got poor practices, that the staff are being exposed to chemicals in the process that they shouldn't, all that kind of thing, right? That's the other side of the coin that I'm going to keep an eye on just out of pure interest.
Now, again, if our listeners want to read up on some of this stuff, what were those websites that they can go and check out again?
Yeah, the one in the Netherlands, the group of eight companies is called Green Vinyl, and their website is greenvinylrecords.com. And then, the second one in Germany is a very long-established pressing plant called Optimal Media.
Now, Kathy, I work at a college radio station here in Chicago.
Yes.
And one of the really interesting trends I've seen over the last couple of years is my students going back and buying cassette tapes and CDs. And the more I've been going into my record stores, the more I'm seeing cassettes and the more I'm seeing CDs. What has caused this trend to start happening? And do you think this is a permanent, you know, are we seeing the return of CDs? Are we seeing the return of cassettes? And are they going to be kind of like how vinyl returned?
Yeah. Oh, I love this. Yeah. This is a topic I find really fun to think about. And in fact, I find it funny because I've always referred to cassette tapes as the least convenient format ever invented. I mean, I've said that so many times in my life.
I do not understand why cassettes are coming back. Like when my students have shown this to me, I look at them, I go, there's better media out there than this.
I know. And that's what makes it so funny. I mean, you understand, like, the reason I say that is probably because of the sequential nature of the tech. Mm-hmm. You know, it means you can't skip tracks. You can't go, you have to rewind, fast forward, all that stuff. Now, we're going to step into a time machine a little bit here.
Man, you're taking me to Europe and now we're going into a time machine? This is fantastic.
I know. I hope you got your passport and your ID. So strap yourself in. Actually, not going that far back in time. We're going to go about 15 years ago. So my passion for music, I came up in like the DIY punk hardcore subculture, right? So that was way, way before this 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed 15 years ago was a lot of bands that were part of that subculture started really dishing out demo tapes again, which was my first like, what the? Like, you know, normally you would get demos from a band like an EP on a 7-inch or, you know, a couple of tracks on a 7-inch. But suddenly it was like demo tapes. And that came out of a necessity to circulate music on a shoestring budget. Dubbed at home, tape to tape, you know, pause, play, record, all that good stuff, and homemade inserts. I mean, that's DIY, right?
Oh, it's so, the very definition of it. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, you know, it's easy to have a cassette player at home and not necessarily a pressing plant at home.
Yeah, yeah.
So the reason I'm mentioning that is because sometimes what happens in the underground is a harbinger for mainstream trends. So I haven't figured out if it's related yet, but that was the first time I saw tapes sort of being popular again. Bringing us back to where we are today in 2024, and we're walking into the record shops and we're like, whoa, this is really fun, seeing all of the formats. Of course, we have artists who are wanting to sell hard goods, basically not the shirts and wearables, but any sort of souvenir or badge of honor that a fan can keep and display, or, you know, maybe even play if they get themselves a cassette player from Urban Outfitters. But when it comes to like the appeal of tapes, I mean, they look cute, right? They're like mini versions of your favorite album artwork, or even unique versions of the artwork. So they're kind of cute, collectible. They just have this like cute, tangible aspect to them. So I think maybe it's that. We'll see. I haven't figured out this conundrum yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. And you know what though? I do love that they've come back, because there is something really pure about having a cassette in your recorder, listening to the radio, hearing that song you love, and then hitting record on it so that you then have the song. Or for, you know, people my age and that generation, what's the best way to tell someone you're in love with them by making them a killer mixtape?
Yes. And the romanticism of mixtapes and all the effort that was involved and putting everything in sequence. I mean, that in itself, that task alone was a labor of love. And, you know,
you knew it was serious if you got the track listing on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially if the band logos were, you know, sort of drawn on as well.
Yeah. Speaking of that punk subculture DIY, the big thing, I've noticed a lot coming back as well, too, is zines. A lot of zines are getting printed. And in fact, there's a Vinylthon zine that you can go and check out, too. Go to vinylthon.com for more information. But yeah, I love like the whole DIY culture coming back with CDs and cassettes and just like collecting and everything. I think that's something that we need to almost embrace more because it's fun. It's that whole aesthetic of being a part of that community.
It absolutely is. I think that's the nail on the head. It's that sense of belonging. And actually, if we're thinking about the other format that we're seeing on the shelves, the rise of the CD from the ashes. Now, I mean, we have the K-pop stans to thank for that, evidently, looking at the data. But, you know, I remember many years ago, one of the artists I worked with stated... she actually said this. She said something, words to the effect of, the last ever CD will probably be sold at a gas station in Alabama by the year 2020. Words to that effect. And that's something that always stuck in my mind, right? And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, as product life cycles go, we know the story. The CD was king until the early 2000s. Those huge margins raked in a ton of cash for the labels to market their artists. And then the decline was because of the emerging tech like peer-to-peer sites, Napster, eventually Apple iTunes. But, you know, that said, there was never anything really non-viable about the format itself. So if you contrast it with my quip about the cassette being the least, basically the least handy format ever invented, the CD completely eclipsed that and the quality was good. So, you know, as a media format, credit where it's due, the CD did a fantastic job.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But you know, tech has evolved ever since then in leaps and bounds. So it's not about a tech change that's making, you know, that's we're seeing these CDs back in stores. Instead, this time, like this comeback is purely driven by fans, right? The fans, the super fans, their desire to literally own a piece of their favorite artist. But of course, you know, these artists in the K-pop genre, they actually are championing this format. They want their release out there on a special CD package that, you know, kind of looks like a book or has more to offer the end consumer. So, yeah, it's really interesting to see this because, I mean, the evolution of the music business is already fascinating and how tech influenced everything since day one. So, but, you know, what we're seeing with the CD here, it's not tech having the influence here. It's the fans and the artists.
Yeah, it's almost it's the reminiscing. It's looking at this really cool media and embracing it again. So I got just a couple more questions for you. Sure. This one might be like a heavy one, if you will. What do you see as some of the biggest issues facing the collective community? Or are there specific issues that you think we should be aware of? Because one thing that I do love with younger people and things like that is they're so socially conscious about everything. What do you see on the horizon? What do you see something that we should be aware of?
I'm thinking about this actually as a lifelong buyer of vinyl. And I'm talking even during the 90s when the aforementioned CD was the aforementioned king, right? Mm-hmm. I never stopped buying records. And the evergreen issue, especially, actually, it's not even evergreen, it's pertinent to nowadays, is quality control. So with that, I mean, let's call them inferior reissues that don't do the originals justice. I would say it's inexcusable now for a record to be missing an insert.
Yes.
And just basically be a regular sleeve and a record and job done. Stamp a label on it. There you go. There's my reissue. It really bothers me. At least do it justice. And yes, I realize there's a balancing act because of the rising price of everything. I mean, every little addition you add to a piece of vinyl bumps the end price up for the consumer. We know that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, have a certain benchmark. Have a certain base level is what I mean. Before you put something out into the world, if it's worth pressing, make sure it's worth, make sure it's worth.
Give people their money's worth.
Yeah. And then also when it comes to quality, I mean, I love the fact that, of course, you know, Gen Z are really getting into vinyl. They're discovering the sense of community you get walking into a record shop. My heart is so full seeing these younger generations really discovering that. To someone whose idea of an ideal Saturday as a teenager was going into the record shop to dig around and check out the new releases. I mean, yeah, and then you'd find your friends in there, you would make friends in there, you become part of the community, and they're, you know, flagships of the local music scene. I think that's wonderful. But then I do get a bit of a, it grates me a little that, you know, they might be spending a lot of money on that precious piece of vinyl. And, you know, putting it on the wall, decoration, wonderful, love it. That's, you know, that's a reason in itself to own it. But if you're going to play it on a turntable with a very poor quality needle, that makes me cry.
Yes. Spend the money, get a good turntable. It will last you forever.
Yeah. And just to really reiterate here, I know this bit, you know, there's been a lot of bashing about, oh, Gen Z don't even own record players, but they buy records. Yeah, so what? They want it on the wall. I love it. I'm here for it. But darlings, if you're going to buy a record player, please, please, please get something that is, you know, not going to eat up your records.
Okay, so final question for you, Kathy, and thank you so much for spending time with us today. What are you currently listening to on vinyl? And what's one album everyone needs to listen to on vinyl? What's your choice?
Okay, I'm currently all in, obsessed with a band from Edmonton, Alberta in Canada. And their name is Homefront. They are a post-punk band and they're merging so many different bands that I love. Like they're just nailing it. They're regurgitating a whole load of old ideas, but it's coming out in such a way that it just lights me up. And their music sounds amazing on vinyl as well, because you get the full depth of all the atmospherics that they've got in there. So their album is called Games of Power. And they have a few EPs out there as well. So they've been in constant rotation. And then I would say, Pete, have I got this right? Teddy Roosevelt once said the Grand Canyon was the place that everyone should visit.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds like something TR would say.
Yeah, so thanks, TR, because I found this question to be one of the impossible ones, because I'm like, wait, what genre do I pick? Where do I go? What is something that is that's suitable for everyone? Nothing, right? But I've come up with one. And my definition of what everyone should listen to on vinyl would be an original, if possible, a 1969 copy on Elektra Records, The Stooges' self-titled record, The Stooges.
That is such a great choice and such a great album. Ah, love it.
Oh. Cool. You're a fan.
I am a fan. It was funny. I was in high school in the late 90s, early 2000s when Korn and Limp Bizkit and Kid Rock were the big rock bands. Mm-hmm. And I was into the Misfits. I was into Green Day. I was into Blink-182, the Stooges, the Sex Pistols. And yeah, so I have deep punk rock roots here.
Oh, I love it. And the fact that, you know, this is like sort of pre the punk sound as well. But, I was lucky enough to get hold of an original copy with the
mid-print that's amazing.
And all that. I'm flexing right now. I realize that. But, you know, it was like, I couldn't pass it up. put it on the stereo, and it was just, it is so alive. That record is alive, I swear.
No, it is.
Like you play it and you're just in the room with the band, and you're in, it's the atmosphere, everything that comes across, start to finish, you're just like, whoa, I've really transported back in time here.
That's awesome. That's a great choice. Kathy, thank you so much for giving us so graciously of your time today. Again, womeninvinyl.com, go and check out their website. Thank you so much. And that was my conversation with Kathy Ramsey, Educational Director of Women in Vinyl. For more information, please visit womeninvinyl.com. That's womeninvinyl.com. Additionally, Jen DiEugenio, founder of Women in Vinyl, has released a book entitled Women in Vinyl, The Art of Making Vinyl. It's available now. I'm Peter Creighton, and thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for listening to this WXAV 88.3 FM podcast. Be sure to visit our website, wxav.com, for more information on your escape from ordinary radio.